welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We will be discussing Season 3, Episode 6, The Axeman Cometh. You might ask, why does the Axeman cometh? Why do we need an Axeman? It feels like we're awfully deep in the season to introduce an Axeman. Well, that's too bad. And with me to meet the Axeman is Miss Shadow Lovely Liz. Hey.
Hello.
And Slow Beef. Hey, what's up?
Yo, how's it going?
Good, good. This episode kind of goes all over in like a really wild way, like in a genre shifty way that I wasn't expecting or like okay with. Like, I don't know. It feels like occasionally it goes from like babysitter mystery shit to actual serial killer horror stuff to like Fiona has cancer. Which it's like really, it's all over.
The horror of human mortality, truly the scariest horror of all.
I mean, did it feel like weird and all over and a little like it lost direction to y'all? Because I know, again, you yes. talked about how you were up on this season early on and kind of like opinion started to drift and waver. Is this about where you felt it start to fall off, you say?
I will say that I completely repressed that this guy existed. And by this guy, I mean the titular Axeman.
In case you're wondering, he's that kind of vibe.
Yeah, like he had the potential to be the funniest character in American Horror Story, period. Like a dude who gets tilted if you don't play jazz like so bad that he kills you. That is the funniest thing I've ever heard, and it also sounds like a Tim and Eric sketch. Like
imagine a guy in a bowler hat walking into a room being like, and you're like supposed to be terrified of him. That's the Axeman.
Once again, based on a real guy too.
Yeah, also, which, by the way, yeah, real guy. Real guy alert. We don't know that was like his deal, but that whole, okay, so let's crack her open. First scene, the opening sequence, is all a flashback to New Orleans 1919, and we're getting like a monologue being delivered by this man that we've never seen before for some reason.
Excuse me.
And in case you're curious, he's writing a letter, and everything that he's saying is a real letter from a real serial killer called the Axeman, who they never caught, kind of like Jack the Ripper or whatever. And they just decided, yeah, that's good. Just have this guy in the show. If you're wondering if he's like plot relevant, no. They just wanted him to be there. They probably just, honestly, if we're being like 100% transparent with one another, they probably just Googled like scary things that happened in New Orleans. And then this came up on some list, like some WatchMojo list or something. And they were like, this is great. Put him in. He's now a character. And he's played by the guy from Succession, who I can't think of his name right now. If you know, if you've seen it, you know. And he's just like, the actor playing the character is just reading the letter that the real serial killer from the early 1900s wrote and sent. I don't know where this got sent. I don't remember. It was either sent to like the newspaper or the police. I don't remember which one it was, but like this was like a very antagonistic letter from a serial killer to the public. And like he was like insane, the real guy. And he's like, I'm a tool of the devil. And I kill people who don't like jazz music? I don't.
And they took this real man who killed people and interpreted him as this cornball ass motherfucker.
Yes,
it's a little gross to have him like reinterpreted as a Looney Tunes killer, because he really is like all in on like, I'm a jazz man, baby. It's what I do. Don't worry, Buttercup. You'll be safe. You got the jazz in you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if the jazz thing. Hold on, I guess I can look it up. Axeman, New Orleans. I don't know if the jazz thing is actually part of the real man's deal, because like, okay, it is.
The part about playing jazz is.
Here it is. I am very fond. This is directly from the real man's letter. I am very fond of jazz music. Mm-hmm. It's right there in the center. And he literally says, okay, so here's the deal of the letter. This is why he's reading it, because it's setting up for what's going to happen. He basically sends this letter. Him being both the real man in real life that happened and also the character in the television show, it's a warning to the public saying basically, hey, at this time, next Tuesday, I am going to be about. I'm going to be out and about. I'm going to be out in the town. If you are not playing jazz, I will murder you. So be playing jazz. it says, and I quote, "One thing is certain, and that is that some of your people who do not jazz it out on that specific Tuesday night, if yeah. there be any, will get the axe." Yeah. That's a real quote from the actual letter.
They love as well saying jazz it for the rest of this episode. Any chance they get, they're like, "Oh no, girls, we have to jazz it." It's just love that. Love jazz as a verb.
I also love it. So that's like, it's setting the stage. He basically reads this whole letter and he's like, yeah, well, he's not reading it. He's like narrating it as he's writing it for our benefit, the viewers. And then like they kind of give us some backstory about him, that he's like a sax player for a jazz band. They don't know that about the real man, by the way. I don't think really know anything about the real man.
This is fanfic.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. 100%.
Cool.
Yeah.
And he keeps his axe in his saxophone box.
A tiny axe, by the way.
Yeah,
like
very
a little
small.
Hand axe, you know?
It's one of those things, too, because we'll see him actually, like, go sickos mode on a couple of people in this opening sequence. He also, like, really approaches quite slowly. I'm just saying, I could beat the axe man. He's an old man with a tiny axe who, A, tells you he's coming, and B, just kind of like makes a ruckus as he's like not like stealthy, which he would need to be. He would need to be. And he's
thinking
not.
Of horseplay, the Axeman, that guy.
Yeah,
he's not like a particularly like overwhelmingly large man or anything, right? Like this isn't like a Michael Myers thing where it's just like, well, yeah, he just overpowers you and like you stab him a little, he doesn't care that much. Like, no, this is just like a sax player.
This is
New Orleans.
If I kick this guy in the balls, like with decent energy, I think it would be GG's for him. I think I could end the Axeman, this Axeman's reign of terror with a swift kick to the balls.
I almost want to. I won't spoil it, but there later in this episode, there's a scene where he has to attack someone, and the circumstances are completely ridiculous. That the other person like should be in real trouble, but they're not in that much trouble because the Axeman is just awful at everything. So you know.
But he hates it if you don't like jazz, and then the paper thin the thing they use to somehow make this relevant to our story, an American Horror Story, Coven, is that the girls from the Robichaux house back in 1919. So I don't know if these were like the OG girls or like an early iteration of the girls
early
or whatever.
Gen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They're Gen 1 or 2, I presume. If I cared enough, I could go back and look at the notes for episode 1, but I don't. They're like, oh, no, did you see this letter in the pay? I don't know why I'm giving them that voice. That is the voice they have.
They
kind
of do that voice. Yeah,
yeah,
I was going to say, they
Orleans.
Do kind of. You're doing it because it's accurate.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no, he's going to be looking for people to kill if we're not playing jazz. Well, we got to play jazz or else we're going to die. I'm like,
oh, no, a whole jazz band will cost a mint in that day. Hell, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
I'm like, don't you guys have magic powers? Like, you guys are worried about you're like the last house that should be worried about the Axeman. You guys have magic. Now, granted, at least probably there's a bunch of you. At least one of you probably has the shitty coochie power. Let's be honest. I don't know which one of you it is, but one of you probably does. That person, they just get to be a cheerleader. They don't get to be involved in this weird plan we're about to do. Or maybe they should. I don't know. Maybe that would have been a better way to deal with the Axeman. Who could say? But they're like, no, we're
these
not.
These witches just like, they forgot they have powers, I think, is the big thing. Because they like very, like even directly, one of them's like, we're powerful. We need to remember, you just don't believe it yet, but we're powerful. I'm like, Can one of them, like, not set people on fire with her mind? Because that would convince me I'm powerful pretty much immediately. Yeah, that would be like, oh, no, yeah, I got this. Oh, a guy with an axe? I can just light him on fire from the other side of the room. No problem.
And also, at that point, hypothetically, there's a Supreme, which means there's someone who, like, also has, like, Queenie's power. That seems like full GGs for the Axe Man. Like, pull a funny prank on him where he tries to axe you and then he dies because he axed you. Incredibly funny prank for the Axe Man.
Also telekinesis, which feels like you could very easily take the small axe and then put the small axe back in him.
You know, Liz,
you mentioned earlier the Axe Man isn't really much of a threat and he's just like a regular guy with an axe. But in context of like a show where people have quote unquote powers, yeah, even more so. Like, he really stinks. He can't do shit.
Honestly, Spaulding could probably just buy a gun. Like, we don't even have to get into like, and you know what I mean? Like, he really sucks. Like,
I mean, I don't think Spaulding was around in 1919, but I agree. I agree that a gun would have also solved the Axe Man problem. Yeah, yeah. Really, anything. Like, a swift kick to the balls, I think, would have also solved the Axe Man problem.
A knife and a little bit of planning. Yeah. Yeah. Like, just being ready, having more than one of you is enough.
But speaking of just a little bit of planning, that's what they decide to do. The one who's, like, leading, it's unclear if she's, like, supposed to be the Supreme, is a girl named Millie. She's kind of like the ringleader of what's about to happen. Also, she's played by Meryl Streep's daughter. That's just a fun tidbit for everyone listening, I guess.
That would explain why she looks so much like Meryl Streep. Yeah. Okay.
She's just like, hey, we should make this wild ass, like, Scooby-Doo Home Alone ass plan to trap the Axe Man. Like, of course, we know somehow he's going to, like, walk past our house. So, all right, let's lure him in and do this insane mousetrap scenario. And they do, and it works, meaning that, like, he's having a great time. He's walking home, and as he's walking home on the night that he threatened that everybody should be playing jazz, everybody's playing jazz. And he's like, this is so cool. But at the Robichaux house, they're playing, I don't remember, like, classical music or something. He hates it.
It's like some opera.
He starts malding. He is upset. He's in his feelings. He's going to post online about it in the 1919 way, which means he's going to go murder some ladies. He just breaks in and is like, well, you know the rules. I gotta kill you. And you think that that's me doing a bit.
That's not me doing a bit. That's the interaction. Yeah, like, she's literally sitting on the floor with her back turned to the door, dealing tarot cards. And he walks in and is just like, hey, Toots, you know the deal. No, you're not jazzing it up, so I gotta kill you. And she flips over a card and goes, death, which... Even my little Midwestern white boy ass knows the death card in tarot doesn't mean someone dies. It means change generally.
Yeah.
It's not actually about a person die. Well, anyway, she flips over death and he goes, yup, that's right. And she goes, but not for me.
Yeah.
And like Shadow the Hedgehog instant transmissions behind them somehow.
And my favorite part about this is you may be thinking, oh, they lured him into some trap. They're going to, like, use some spells on him or something. No.
The spell of wives with knives. Yeah. Go.
They all have knives and they all start stabbing the ever loving shit out of him. Just like, and like, he doesn't really fight back, which, I mean, I get it. Like, there's a lot of them. But, like, I think if I was being stabbed by a bunch of people, I'd, like, try to get a few shots in before I go down.
He is so nonplussed over the lack of jazz. Just like, oh, I can't grit my teeth to fight back over the no jazz. How could you? You know, but.
Also,
the axe is my,
like,
only move.
He's just, like, a regular guy who's a jazz musician. So this is probably, like, the first time he's being stabbed. So he's just like, oh, fuck, that hurts a lot. Oh, man.
That's what I was doing
really
to
focus
everyone.
Focus with that going on. I was doing this to other people. This shit sucks. Oh, my God.
Thank you for showing me the light. Oh.
Oh, no, wow. Maybe
now
too
I'm
much.
Dead.
Stop showing me the light. No. Too many.
Which, spoiler alert for like roughly 20 minutes from now, he will be a ghost. In case you're wondering how he is at all tied to this house, he will be a ghost here, because it's
Thank
American
God.
Horror Story, and that's what we do, is we have ghosts that are stuck in houses. I don't know why the American Horror Story people think that that's a thing about ghosts, that they're like landlocked to property lines, but that's what they
also
believe.
Wouldn't witches be like acutely aware of this? Wouldn't they be like the one group of people who would be like, hey, take him over to the neighbor's place before we finish him off?
Yeah,
you know?
Right?
Well, that's the thing is like, we know for a fact, factually, that multiple other people that we've seen with our own eyes have died on premises in this house, and they did not get murder housed and become ghosts here. So it seems exclusive to this guy.
I was gonna say at first I was like, well, it's because his death was really distressing and he didn't like it, and then I'm like, well, no one else who died there really like was having a great time.
No, two of them had their throats cut by Fiona. Two of them died in the exact same way in the exact same spot. If anything was gonna like cause ghosts,
when Fiona
that.
Does it, it's like cool. Yeah, there's like a split second where they're like, yeah, I'm okay with this, and then they get their head cut off.
So like, they don't straight up say it, but I would like to meme my own like headcanon for this, is that the witches who were stabbing him to death knew that no one who would like Jazz would ever live in this house ever again, so they like did a spell on him as he was dying to like curse him to live here and listen to not Jazz for the rest of eternity. That's his punishment for being a serial killer. Because that's the other thing, is like, okay, it's like it's kind of a noble like thing to, I guess, try and take out and trap a serial killer to save New Orleans or whatever, but like, at the end of the day, you probably should make the authorities aware that you did it, you caught him. And he's dead now.
Oh yeah, you could just do that.
Wait, shit, did we mention that they felt the need to add in the funniest girl boss detail, as if like a coven of witches who were gonna commit kill a serial killer wasn't like cool and girl boss enough, where they're like, also we're winning suffrage. And it's like, wait, whoa, why do we add that in? It's like, that's right, we're strong independent women and we're gonna get the right to vote, and we're doing it, that's ours now. And it's like, oh, okay, I guess
because we killed the ass man.
I guess American Horror Story, I guess you can just like take suffrage credit.
Yeah, and like the other thing is like, I guess some people would be like, oh, well then they would find out that they were witches, and it's like, well, they didn't use magic or to kill him or find him.
Right.
They just made a Scooby-Doo ass plan and it happened to work. And then they killed him with regular people knives. So there's not really a reason why they couldn't just be like, hey, everybody, we got that serial killer that was killing people. We got him. Here's his axe. I think you'll find there will be no more axe man killings. But no, I guess that would have been a loophole for American Horror Story to try and explain, given that this was a real man and not a fictional character. He was a real man who existed in history that never was caught. Spoiler alert for a billion seasons from now, they do the same thing with the Zodiac Killer in two more seasons. So I guess it's not that big of a stretch.
Can't they, like, why do they keep doing this? Like, just make somebody who's based on it who's not the same guy, you know? Like the Pipe Wrench Man, who's really into Zydeco or something, you know? Like,
you don't just call him the Sax Man, and then it would make sense that he leans in on the sax thing so much. Yeah, then it'd be like, oh, it's like the Axe Man, but it's the Sax Man. That's clever, you know? And then, well, that would require them to be clever. That's a great point, me. Yeah, sorry. Never mind. I talked myself out of it. They'd never do it.
That's the other thing that's, like, wildly confusing about American Horror Story, is there's this like all or nothing idea to like having characters that are inspired by historical people that existed. It's really, they're either not based on anyone ever, or they just are that person. Like, there's not like, yeah, this person was like, you know, inspired by, is like a kind of skeevy way to put it, but like, yeah, this villain was inspired by Eileen Wuornos or something. Like, it's not right. Eileen Wuornos, it's not the real lady, but like, obviously we took some elements of her story. And in the same way that Norman Bates was inspired by Ed Gein. You know what I mean?
Right, like, yeah.
You took I'm doing air quotes, inspiration from a real life bad person and then made them into a fictional character. They didn't just be like, yeah, we made a movie starring Ed Gein. Like, that's not what happened.
No.
But yeah, American Horror Story is like, no, we don't do inspiration. This is just the person. We don't know how to make our own characters. So we're just going to put our fan fiction of the real guy in here. And I hope that no one Googles it to see what he did or if he was real. Too bad that we have this podcast, because we do, and we did. So that's the opening sequence of the television show. Now it's time to get back to present day. And Zoe's like, for some reason, like puttering around with Madison's stuff. Like, she's like digging around in there. I don't really know what like her plan is exactly. I don't know what she's like trying to do or anything. Like, I guess maybe looking for a note as to where she might have gone. And then more Home Alone ass shit happens, and like an airplane bottle of like booze rolls away exactly to where Zoe needs to find a secret compartment in the witch house, which to that I say, why do we have a secret compartment in the witch house? It's just got like old photos and stuff. I guess it's like storage, but it's definitely like hidden. It's not like a closet. It's hidden like inside a closet. So it's not like readily available to most people, nor does it seem that most people are aware of it.
Also, it's not like items you would need to hide, I guess, is the weird part. Like, it's like a Ouija board, which it's like, yeah, that's it's witch house. They probably have those.
Right.
Also, you can just go buy one. Like, you can just buy one. They're not like an artifact that you'd find in a museum. They're like a thing you can readily buy now, currently, all the time. Every day, you can just buy one. But they're like, oh, it's a Ouija board. We got to use it to talk to Madison, I guess. And I'm like, I don't... This is where, like, the powers get really confusing, because I'm like, you'd think that if a ghost was sentient enough to use a Ouija board, which we'll find out in a few minutes that they are, that they would also be able to communicate with the person or people in the house that have telepathy and can hear thoughts at all times. They can't, for some reason.
This is also confusing because Zoe is in, like, she's convinced that Madison, like, is still alive, I think, at this point, but also that she's dead and she can talk to her. It's weird. It's confusing. They really have to contort the characters into using this Ouija board is what it is.
She also gives this weird history lesson where she's like, you know what? Like, witches are on the decline. They're all dying. Like, we have to stop this. Which is like, wait, where did we establish that? You know, which is, I guess, true.
She's like, we need to find Madison's body so that there's still four witches left. Which it's like, wait, what? Wait, hold on. How does that help? Oh, well.
By the way, we still don't know, in case anybody is sitting there wondering, no, Kyle will not show up for a while. She doesn't care about him right now. Her primary focus is she is now dead set on preserving witch culture, which is a wild thing for the girl with the like killer coochie to want. It's a weird drive. I
she
know
saw
why
Myrtle
they're doing
and was
it.
Was like, if I just have bad powers, I should just go into administration.
Yeah.
I should just be really on board with the whole like society we got going.
And like one of the things she says, one of the direct quotes that she says is she's like, in Salem there were hundreds of us. I'm like, that's not even true. Like, that's not that wasn't even a thing. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's not even like part of like fake history. I don't know where that came from. And she's just going off about how like, you guys aren't doing enough.
Queenie, how many witches could there possibly be? 1 million? 100 billion? Like, whoa, no.
And she like, she starts going off and she's like, there's less witches now and we're dying all the time. And she's like, and nobody's doing anything about it. And I'm like, literally all Cordelia and Fiona have been doing since episode one is like being like, hey, you guys need to chill the fuck out. we cannot have people knowing we do magic because I need to keep you guys alive for this exact reason. And I'm like, what do you mean no one's doing anything? That's literally what the school is. That's what the school is a place, is like a refuge for witches so they don't die. Like, that's where you live. That's why you're there. It's not like Killer Coochie prison. You didn't go to jail. You're not on house arrest. Like, you're there to not get murdered by someone else we'll talk about later in this episode.
What do you mean, Liz? Anyway.
And then they, like, I guess they agree to do the Ouija thing. And then at some point, I don't actually remember exactly where this part happened, but Zoe just pulls out absinthe and is like, we got to drink this absinthe. And
we got to drink absinthe. Yeah, it's the drink of the divine, which we are. And then they just do shots of absinthe, which, hey, have either of you had absinthe before?
Yes.
Or just me?
I've had it once.
Okay, yeah.
Given to me by
did
a witch,
it,
by
like,
the way.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Did you serve it over a sugar cube or anything, or just try to take it straight?
No, she did like a whole thing where she like set up a whole like thing with a cube and stuff.
Sugar cube, yeah.
Still pretty bitter and pretty rough, though. Yeah. Still pretty like
licorice.
Yeah, not the most pleasant beverage in the world. Wormwood, not known for tasting particularly pleasant, or else we would have named it something nicer than Wormwood. We would have named it like Mintwood or Sweetwood or something. Yeah, the idea of just taking a shot, just raw dogging absinthe straight, is fucked. That's so bad. It would be horrible. Oh my god. Like, Queenie's correct to be like, oh, no thanks. Like, it's not Malort, but damn, it's getting there. It's on the road to Malort, just taking a shot of absinthe. Oh boy.
Yeah. I don't remember if that's to like give them courage or just to like bond them or whatever. I don't remember why they do the shot of absinthe,
isn't,
but I guess
like
they wanted to.
I feel like absinthe has like mystical kind of like connotations in fiction, you know, where it's like, you know.
Well, before it was readily available, people would always assume it would make you like hallucinate or anything. Right. I remember even when I was a teen, people being like, oh yeah, if you can get absinthe and real absinthe and drink it, you'll hallucinate like crazy. And then like eventually everyone was like, oh, we did the science on it. Nah, it's just alcohol. It's just booze.
Yeah. Either way, they do their shots that I don't even know how Zoe knows there's absinthe in the house, actually.
Also, they don't hallucinate, for the record.
Yeah.
This could have just been anything. This could have been shots of turpentine, and it wouldn't have changed the application and the plot.
They could have just not taken shots, if we're being honest. I don't know why they do. But they do, and then they're like, we got to do this the Ouija board, which they start calling a spirit board for some reason. I guess because Ouija is trademarked.
It's copyright, yeah. Milton Bradley.
And Queenie is like,
I will say these shots and like the apprehension of it, of Queenie being like, I don't know if I should be doing shots, is like kind of what gave the intro of like teenage babysitter mystery shit. Like, it feels very after school specially. And then them going and doing the Ouija board afterwards and being like, oh, I don't know about all this. It's just like, we had a character burned at the stake last episode. I don't know if y'all were like there, you know, for that. So it's like a little weird to have them go back and be like, oh, I don't know, alcohol. Okay.
Yeah, it's very odd. And also, Queenie was gored to almost, well, to death, actually. She did die for trying to fuck a Minotaur. So I feel like on the scale of maybe I shouldn't do this, I don't know, me personally, I think trying to fuck a Minotaur, maybe a little bit higher than underage drinking. Like,
yeah.
Maybe just like a smidge higher on the list of don't do that, maybe.
If we were in like making quadrant graphs and like foolish bravery was like to the right, yeah, Minotaur fucking way farther to the right than doing a shot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It does move the scale a little bit further towards Minotaur when you find out the shot is absinthe, but not much, not by like a notable amount or anything.
Yeah, no. You need to be like taking it up your butt.
Yeah.
Like you need to be taking the absinthe up your butt. Then it'd be like, we'd be pushing there. Yeah, not the Minotaur. That's crazy. That's, we need a new scale. That's too far to the right. A man bull is, you're asking for
his
trouble.
His name is Bastion. Yeah, and then Queenie says, like, yeah, we can't use the spirit board because my grandma did it, and it melted her face off, which, first of all, I have a lot of questions about that, but we will never get closure. That sounds like something else happened, and a Ouija board was maybe involved in, like, the things that led up to it, but not at all affiliated with the melting of the face.
Yeah, she's like, it released a ghost that got so mad it burned her house down. I'm like, well, that, I don't know how much that's the board's fault.
Yeah.
Bad ghost. You had a bad ghost in your house. That's not the board's fault. And then Zoe says, to who? I'm not sure. As in meaning, like, this means nothing to anybody, not even the people in the room. She's like, oh, there's three of us. I think we could take a ghost is, I think, the implication, because I don't think that's how Ouija boards work.
You have vagina powers, yeah. Zoe. Keep it in check. Oh, my God. I could get a ghost. No, you couldn't. That pussy ain't killing a ghost.
I mean, she did, it, to her credit, which is not much because I hate Zoe, she did kill like 300 zombies with a chainsaw in the last episode or the episode before. I don't remember which.
Okay.
I think it was the last episode.
I mean, you still got to keep it in check. A ghost is like, you know, ethereal. It's like a different thing. It's incorporeal.
I would think I was hot shit if I killed like 300 zombies with a chainsaw out of nowhere. That is pretty
hard. Sorry. I forgot about the zombie thing because it's so dumb.
So they do it, of course. They do the thing, and they're trying to talk to Madison. And then, like, every Ouija board scene in every show or movie that's ever existed, ever in the history of history, they start doing it. They're like, oh, are you moving it? No, I'm not moving it. And then it's a weird-looking spirit board, by the way. Very odd. Has a very strange font. It's like, it looks like someone printed it from, like, Party City. I don't know. It's very like we had our props guy make a Ouija board instead of just buying a Ouija board prop.
Right.
Very strange. And it spells out, I don't remember, but it's the Axeman who's using it.
It's like, are we alone? No. Did you die? Yes. You know, who killed you? And then, you know, who are you? Or, you know, who killed you? And then it's you. And then, like, who are you? And then, Axeman. I'm the Axeman. Yeah. He's the Axeman.
They hate it. When he spells Axeman, they start losing it. And I'm like, do you guys know who that is? Like, I would assume this was Madison fucking with me if it was
also
me.
Also, like, in old text message format, when it's like, who killed you? It says you, like the letter U, like not even Y-O-U. Like, come on. Like, fucking X, man.
Well, he knows he's talking to teenagers. Said, like,
if it was like Y-O-U space T-O-O-T-S, who's toots? Like that. Something like that to be like, oh, he's an old-timey weird guy.
Yeah, he just starts spelling out, play some jazz with the Ouija board.
What do you want from us? And then it says skeepity bop buddy bop buddy boop. What does that mean?
Oh no, this is the ghost of the Axeman.
Yeah, but instead, even they could have just been like, oh, like a juggalo? Like, no, that's Hatchet Man. No, you're thinking that's the wrong guy. But they just all panic upon seeing the Axeman, and the Queenie says, which it's like weird the way she phrases this, because it's like kind of like, well, she did and you stopped, so like you're good. Because she goes like, if survival is so important, you need to know who you're talking to. Which it's like, wasn't that like the second question?
Like,
hey, are you here? Are you dead? Who are you? Axeman. Oh, okay, tight. Like, I feel like she got there pretty quickly, Queenie. I don't think that was like the problem. The problem was engaging with ghosts in general.
Yes.
Yeah, because like the thing is, I think that Zoe is working, and she's like very convinced about her plan. But like, I think that she thinks that like the only ghost that could be there would potentially be Madison, And I'm like, I don't know, if I lived in a witch house, I would definitely assume there were other ghosts there, besides just Madison. Also, like, really odd to assume that she died in the house, because they're like, if she just went missing, if you were in like a school of girls, teenage girls, especially one who had recently suffered a horrific trauma and went missing, I wouldn't assume that it happened in the house. Like, it's weird that they're like, sure, ghost is probably here. If she's dead, she's probably here. Like, she is, but there's no reason these characters should think this.
There's quite a few times this episode. There's a part later that we probably won't get to in today's episode where she's presented with a very limited palette of information regarding what someone was doing or what their part was. And she just intuits an absolutely insane conclusion that is correct for the record. So the show wants her to get to that conclusion. But her getting there is bonkers. And Zoe does this a couple times over the course of this episode where she just gets a bunch of information that should lead her to conclusion A. And instead she goes, no, actually, I just know what the truth is, which is really annoying from a narrative standpoint.
Yeah, it like is insistent. That's where one of the things about Coven falls apart for me, which it's like this for a lot of shows that have characters that have powers. You run into it with X-Men and Marvel and DC. Any time that there's people that have like a wide variety of powers, and some of those powers open incredible loopholes for narrative storytelling, is that a lot of times the people who write them, and especially American Horror Story, will just be like, supernatural thing. They do it with non-powers too. They do it in the other seasons that have supernatural elements where they're just like,
yeah,
don't think about it too hard. It's just whatever you don't understand, just assume magic fixed it, or ghosts fixed it, or ghosts did it, or magic did it, or they knew because of magic, or they knew because of ghosts, or something like that, which is like kind of shitty. It kind of can handle
if you have like a trilogy of media and you rely on that narrative device like twice intentionally, and I think that's about where that can land. Not just, we made a bunch of mistakes. Sorry.
Yeah, or we didn't feel like explaining it. Like, we didn't want to have a logical conclusion to how this character ended up here. So just assume that, like, magic helped them or ghosts helped them at some point. Like, a good example would be, like, how did Fiona kill the Minotaur and then behead him and then send the head to Marie Laveau? We're not going to show you that. Just fill in the blanks yourself. I'm sure both of you maybe just thought, oh, magic. Yeah, that's what they want us to think, I'm sure. Magic. What magic? I don't know. We didn't want to film a fight scene with Jessica Lange, so.
There's like a lot of, it's like when it's a tool that's being used to sculpt a narrative that's like very satisfying, it's great. When it's used as just like Bondo to like cover up some like dents and holes in the carcass of the story. Yeah, way less appealing, you know. It's like being used to cover up holes as opposed to being used to like add richness or like detail, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you know. They love it and I hate it. But yeah, that's about where
it's
with
trash.
That.
Yeah, it's so bad. It's so bad, yeah, 100%.
Now, prepare for the emotional flashbang that we all received upon watching this episode as we were all
going from fucking Babysitter's Club of the Ouija board, finding out about the Axeman and going, oh no, the Axeman, to Fiona has cancer.
Yeah, in case y'all forgot, like, Fiona has cancer.
I forgot.
It's like
Fiona
really
had
just
cancer.
Like getting hit in the head with a fucking rock when this transition hits. Like, it's just Fiona sitting in the middle of like a room of a few people all receiving chemo at the same time. I'm not sure what this setting is supposed to be. It's a little strange. Maybe I'm too poor to have ever seen a hospital that looks like this. No. I don't know.
Yeah, she's in.
No.
So
she's in group chemo.
Actually, I guess to be totally fair, I've heard chemo. I don't have any experience. I've heard chemo is like a little nicer, just because you're there for hours, so it's like they try to make it a little. But it does seem pretty. It seems real, real nice. You know, like a nice little smoking lounge, but the opposite. you know.
Yeah. I also, like, I have seen in other media, I don't know personally, but I have seen in other media that when someone's receiving chemo, that, like, it is sometimes in, like, a group setting, not like a bunch of people, but, like, it's just like an open room, I guess, probably because you are doing it for a while, so maybe there's, like, some sense of community.
Yeah, it just feels like it's like a lot of people.
No,
it feels like it's like 20 people hanging out. It's like a small like dinner party at this point, which this could just be me not knowing, but that feels like a really high risk behavior for people who are like at their most immunocompromised.
Or just emotionally vulnerable. I don't think I would want to be, like, in a room full of strangers who are also in extremely, like, emotionally compromised positions, just, like, hanging out, like, hey, you all here because of the cancer, too? Like, it's not, like, a great it's not a meet and greet. It's almost like a forced, like, support group, I guess. I don't know if that's the intention or not. It really sucks when you're Fiona, who has mind-reading powers, I guess. And by that I mean she just now has mind reading powers, and I'm not making that up. They do establish that she just gets mind reading powers this episode.
Which, yeah, so this brings the question of, if the Supreme doesn't have all the powers and actually just has like the ones needed to pass the test, like the seven miracles or whatever, and other witches can also develop multiple powers, why does anyone care about the Supreme, I guess? Like, oh, she has, like, seven pretty good ones. Like, damn, nice build. your daughter can, like, see stuff by touching people and also is, like, a plant wizard, too. Like, I get it just feels like other people could spec better. Like, I would have loved to see Madison go down the pyro path, right? Like, you know, I think she'd done great.
Yeah, and what's weird is, like, they will get, like, a whole sequence with, like, title cards and everything at some point, but like the seven wonders are very specific powers, one of them being the mind reading, if I'm not misremembering. It's not like they are ones that you cannot have. It's not like you can have like a gotcha of, oh, I got these seven, it's still seven, and I got to it first, so I'm the Supreme. It's gotta be at least these seven.
Did we talk about the seven wonders? Did that come up yet?
Briefly.
We haven't talked about what they are, other than just it is the seven abilities that are the mark of a Supreme. But also there's other ones you can get outside of that. So like,
gotcha. Okay.
It's not really that. Again, it's just someone with like a really good build.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the reason they mention this is because of what I said in one of our previous episodes of like, hey, this could have been so easily solved if Fiona had just used mind reading. It's kind of a huge plot hole that she didn't. And they're like, no. You see, she couldn't use it until she got chemo for some reason. Also, in case, if you're wondering why we were all like, holy shit, Fiona has cancer? How did I forget? It's because she hasn't mentioned it in three episodes. She mentioned it one time to Madison before Madison died, which I don't know about you, but Madison getting her throat slit kind of superseded Fiona being like, I have cancer in passing. during that conversation, and she, the only thing that she says is, I have cancer and I'm not going to do chemotherapy. Those are the two things she says about it in succession, and then never mentions it again. And the next time we are introduced to the plot of Fiona having cancer, she is getting chemotherapy.
Egg on my face, says Fiona.
Yeah. I guess the idea of this is that she now needs to like be alive to like protect Delia. But like she thinks, or she thought rather, that killing Madison would like keep her alive. Like, granted, she doesn't know that that will work because she knows that Madison wasn't going to be the next Supreme because of her heart murmur or whatever. But like, why would this character who has a established pattern of behavior not just be like, well, I gotta try and kill the next Supreme, so that I don't die, so that I can keep my my daughter alive. Like, why wouldn't that be her focus instead of being like, it's chemo time? I know I said I wasn't gonna do chemo, but it's chemo time. Also, I can make people not dead. Why can't I fix my own chemo? Or why can't I fix my own cancer?
Yeah, they're weirdly selective about medical stuff. Like, just like certain things are like, no, you gotta hold that. And others are like, yeah, you can do it. We even have that happen later in this episode where, what's her name? Funny Swamp Witch is like, yeah, they're too far gone for me to bring them back. And then Zoe goes, well, I implore you to reconsider. And she goes, okay. And then they bring her back.
Yeah. Yeah, they are very fast and loose with necromancy and healing in this show.
Yeah, to the point that, like, literally one of them goes, I can't do this. And the other one goes, please. And she goes, all right. And then does it.
You convinced me. You convinced me to do it. Also, I don't think we're going to get to it today, but Misty Day has, like, a wild change in attitude in this episode. I love it. I love her. She is great. She just becomes a different person, though. It's very strange. Lily Robb's characters do that a lot in American Horror Story for some reason. Almost every, now that I'm thinking about it, like, every season, actually, that I can think of off the top of my head, her character has, like, a flip switch at some point and just becomes a different person.
So what I think it might be is, like, she's really charming and she's a really good actress. So, like, they put her in a small role up front, planning on it being like a small role, and then everybody like kind of loves it and they're like, well, we have to write a bigger part for her now, and then they write like a more like bombastic role, because that's always what it is, right? Is it's an escalation from like more of a shy, meek kind of background character to like, now we gotta give her more time on the screen, people love this little lady. Yeah, like that seems to be what it is. I don't know if that is how it happened, but that seems to be the pattern every season I've seen, at least so far.
I love it for her because I love Lily Robb, and I love all of her characters. She's delightful as Mary Eunice. Yeah, she's my favorite character in season one. I just love her. I love all of her characters. She's just the best. I love her.
They every time they bring her in more, I'm like, correct, the good decision. I love this for us. This is so much better now. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's getting chemo. She being Fiona, not Misty Day. And she's like, this sucks. I hate this. I want to leave. And then a doctor's like, no, you got to stay. And she's like reading the minds of all the other people who are getting chemo. And like one is like, oh, I'm not going to be able to see my daughter's wedding because I'm going to die because of cancer. And then like another one's like, oh, my husband's with me, being very supportive, and he deserves better, but here he is by my side, and like all these different people. And then she's like, this sucks, I'm leaving. And the doctor's like, no, you gotta stay and do your chemo. And then I don't remember how this leads into this conversation, but she's like, do you think I could ever...
So it's weird. I do remember what happened, because this is strange. This is such a weird pivot of character for Fiona. This is like really off-putting scene, which is made even more off-putting by Sonic the Hedgehog being like, let's go to Olive Garden at the end and then we can hit the camera, because that's how it fucking ends. But she's like, I realized I want to just be owned by a man one time, or like something like that. Like, it's very strange.
One great last love affair, like out of nowhere.
Yeah, like I want to have one last affair. I just want to be like had, and it's like, oh, okay. And so she's just like, do you think there's a chance? And the doctor turns to her and goes, oh yeah, my mom met someone on eHarmony. You should be fine.
And they're literally going to Nova Scotia or whatever.
Walks off immediately after saying that. It's hilarious.
It's so fucking funny. He's just like, you know, you can find love at eHarmony.com. They have affordable subscriptions. Okay, bye.
Farmers only. Yeah.
And she goes, okay, and then sits back down in her chair and goes, thank God for eHarmony. Now I can finish my chemo.
Which I immediately put in the group chat as soon as it happened. I'm like, this has to be an ad read. This has to be an ad read.
It's so
and
bad.
That also has to be why, like, and the only way they could lead into it was having Fiona be like, I want to be in love one last time. Because, like, listen, that's not that crazy for, like, an older lady. Like, we did kind of hint it that, like, she's not happy that, like, men don't look at her anymore or whatever. But this lady also has, like, a lot of other stuff going on that absolutely supersedes wanting to yeah. bone one more time. Absolutely supersedes that.
Also, things that she has said directly to us, the audience, and the camera that supersede it. Like caring about her daughter not being, like, killed and in trouble now that her daughter is blinded and she failed to protect her. Like, that is her thing right now. So having her just be like, I want to have love. Well, try going to eHarmony.gov.
Can you imagine if that's how this, like, I spoiler alert, it's not, but could you imagine that if that's how, like, this season ended, was like Fiona meets someone on eHarmony and, like, there's a whole episode dedicated to it?
I wouldn't be that
I've decided
shocked.
I'm becoming a bad bitch on Bumble, girls. get out the camera, let's get some selfies.
Go on the Thomas Kincaid forums like a normal person.
That's right, where you can meet Dan Helsing. Well, let's...
yeah, so the lady who was worried about not making it to her kid's wedding, Fiona does the same thing she did to the lady with the dead baby and just, like, touched by an angel's this lady and is like, you're gonna go to your daughter's wedding. And the lady's like, what the fuck did you just say to me?
But she's like, buy a nice dress, spend it all, go all out one last time. And she's like,
but
who are you?
And she doesn't know. Like, it wasn't like, I'll bring the baby back to life. Just sort of like, you should buy a nice dress. Just want you to know I'm reading your mind. Creepy, right? Take easy. You know?
So, and this happens a couple times. Because, again, there's a part later where Nan is reading someone's mind. And only relays, like, 1% of the information. And it's just assumed that everyone in the scene actually heard all of it. And I think that's the case here, is it's like everyone just knows this lady's reading their mind somehow.
Right.
It's unclear how, but they're just aware of it.
I feel like that's the kind of thing that I'm like, I'm not paranoid about many things, but, like, I think we've all had that thought once in a while of, like, I'm gonna think something, like, it specific in case there's someone in here who can read minds. Like, I feel like Fiona just confirmed that latent fear that many people have, that kind of, like, intrusive thought of, like, oh no, what if there's a mind reader in here? Except for this lady just takes it pretty well. She's like, oh, okay, I'm going to go buy a nice dress for my daughter's wedding or whatever. Also, again, like Slow Beef said, Fiona, like, doesn't know that unless the implication is that she cured that lady's cancer and no one else's cancer in the room, which would be hilarious. And I hope that that's the takeaway, is that Fiona's like, that lady gets to not have cancer anymore. Everyone else, kick rocks. but that's the end of that scene. Now we're back at the Robichaud house. They being the three girls who are still at the house, who will kind
Teen
of
girl
be,
squad.
Who are kind of like all one character at this point, because they never are in a scene by themselves. Really, they're all together for the rest of the episode. So Zoe,
they've become the mystery machine. Uh-huh.
Final Fantasy X2, yeah, absolutely,
yeah,
100%.
They're like googling the Axeman, and, like, looking up stuff about him. And then one of them says something to the effect of, like, who doesn't have a fan site these days? Because they find a fan site for the Axeman. And by a fan site, I just mean, like, a website about him.
Yeah. It's Wikipedia.
Yeah. And they're like, this is the ghost of the Axeman. And I guess the witches who lived here before us killed him. And then Zoe's like, great, now we can contact Madison.
Another case of wild intuition here, of just like, oh, he thinks where does he think we killed him? And then, like, I think Nan just, like, points at a photo of the past ones. It's like, no, it's them. He thinks we're them. It's like, oh, okay, I guess. That's a wild fucking jump, but sure.
He's dumb as rocks and thinks that we're these people that look nothing like us.
Which, by the way, he explicitly says later on, I don't think I'm aware of what this room was in the past and the concept of time passing, because nobody's playing no goddamn jazz.
Oh, my God. And, yeah, and so Zoe also, like, decides that for whatever reason this means that they can contact Madison now. I don't know
what
connection is there. It's just really, I don't know what, I can't even like give them the benefit of the doubt because I don't know what the connection is between her being like, oh, he's the Axeman, huh? Okay, well, we're going to use him to contact Madison. I'm like, what? What do you mean?
She's like, I have leverage now. And it's like, he told you he's the Axeman. What do you mean you have leverage? I have leverage now. What leverage?
Yeah.
And so, like, Queenie and Nan are both just like, what do you mean? No, we're not doing that. And so Zoe's like, okay, fine, you won't. And then just walks off and does it.
Yes.
Yeah. She's like, I'm trying to think of a good way to explain what her plan is. Her plan is, and it's going to be real weird when I say it, and I promise you, it's because it's really weird in the show. Zoe goes back to use the Ouija board again, but alone this time. And she asks the Axeman to, like, say where Madison is. And the thing that she offers him, and she says it in the most questionable way that she can, and every other person who will say it will also say it in the most questionable way possible.
I'm going to jerk you off, Jazzman.
Yeah. She's like, I'm going to give you what you want. Release. And I'm like, bad way to say it. And everyone else will say it too. And it's like, what?
I guess, like, it's a good option select, right? Because, like, if you can get away with just, like, giving a ghost a hand job as opposed to, like, releasing a serial ghost killer out in the wild, you want to present them the option, right? Just say, like, I'll give you what you want, release. And if they show up and, like, take their pants off, you're like, great. We've done our 10, 15 minutes. I'm done. We move on with our life. This is awesome. Got a ghost bargain. Sick. As opposed to, like, it's like, all right, now you free me into the wild. And it's like, shit, I was hoping you wanted the hand job.
Yeah, that's what's so weird about it is because, like, it's not just going to be Zoe who's going to have this interaction with him where he's like, I want release. Like, he's going to be really weird about it to another person also. And he's like, I didn't get my release from the witch that lied to me. So now you're going to give me my release. But, like, he does it in, like, a weird, aggressive way. And you're like, all right, does he want a hand job? Is that what's going on?
I've got jazz and spiritual blue balls. Help me out.
He fully, like, gives the blue balls speech, but then, like, the release they're talking about is releasing him out into the wild, and I'm like, y'all could have definitely worded this differently.
It hurts a ghost when you don't hear jazz, I swear.
You're trying to, like, make a metaphor out of this, but instead it's just weird. It's like they, like, slap the word metaphor on it, but it's like a metaphor for what? Yeah. You're like, no, it's a metaphor.
In case you're wondering, like, in his weird intro, it's not like he, like, was weirdly horny or something. Like, he's, like, not sexual at all.
I mean, he was the saxophonist, so he was pretty horny, but, you know... Not, like, sexually.
They could have worked a pun in there. It would have tied this all together in a way that I would have appreciated a lot more than the way that it actually goes.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I'm going to give you release if you tell me where Madison is. And so, like, I guess he knew because he spells attic and he's right. So, like, I guess he knew. And then she goes up to the attic and she's like poking around in Spalding's weird doll room. And there's a big teddy bear and it's stinky in there. And she moves the big teddy bear and oh no, there's Madison's body. And she's like really, really dead, like has been for a while and is in several pieces and is badly decomposed.
Like could be smelled from the door.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not great. I guess Spalding didn't think to, like, I don't know, spray some Febreze or something every once in a while. Who knows?
Yeah, that's enough for sure.
I mean, it's better than corpses, just not doing anything.
Famously easy to preserve and cover. Don't require any large amounts of labor.
No, there is definitely not like a whole process that goes into preparing a body for burial.
Absolutely not. Just leave it wherever. I don't know. Put it in a dress.
And so Zoe, who has just stumbled upon what she knows is Spalding's room, by the way, because she identifies it in the last episode as being Spalding's room, is not immediately like, holy shit, doll room. Also, if Madison's in here, I gotta get the fuck out of here. Something is is amiss. Also, maybe Spalding's in here. He never leaves the house. She just is like poking around in there. Doesn't check her corners. Is just real bad. Awareness.
Question number one is definitely, where is Spalding? And until you have information about question one, no other questions are allowed to be asked.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
The answer is behind her. He's behind her. And he grabs
rest in peace, pepperoni and cheese.
Yeah.
And we cut to commercial, and I don't know that we're going to get to it this podcast, but really annoyingly, in the very next scene, you see them, and even though he's got her, like, he's grabbed her from behind, in the next scene, she has the upper hand immediately, where I rewound it, like, twice, where I'm like, wait, did I, like, miss something?
Mm-hmm.
But no, they do an annoying time loop thing, but whatever.
And then they show us what happens later in a flashback, which is insane, way to frame this, because, like, literally, they could have just shown us what they show in the flashback. It's like they forgot to put that into the show when they were editing. And they're like, oh, shit, yes. We forgot that scene where she's fighting Spalding. And they're like, okay, we'll put it in now. And I'm like, you know, you can put scenes in the, they're not like in stone. You can go back and change things. You're not like bound to them by law. That's really what it feels like. They just took they forgot a chunk of the scene and then just showed it to us as a flashback in like 3 minutes. It's very weird. But yeah, anyway, don't worry about him right now. Delia's home and she's blind and she's got the stick that I don't know what it's, the cane.
So yeah, I guess it's just like later now because like they were upstairs, like, last we heard was Spalding grappling with Zoe, but now we just hard cut to them, like, being upstairs and just vibing without hearing, you know, people grappling in the attic or someone screaming from being burned, for example.
Also, two out of the three people in this scene have mind reading, so, like, you'd think maybe they would hear some distress, maybe. Nan always has the problem of when people's thoughts are too loud, they're like really distracting, so she has to wear the headphones. I would think getting attacked by Spalding
was shown
would be
that. And Fiona was getting passively annoyed by people at chemo just thinking about their daughter fondly. So
right.
So yeah, it's odd that they don't notice that. And Delia is like adjusting as well as she can to being blind, I guess. And Hank is there, so I guess he didn't leave. And
yeah.
And he's with Fiona, and they're all very unhappy to be in the same room.
And then Delia makes the biggest dork complaint in the universe, and God bless Fiona for not just like laughing. Because they walk in the room, and Delia's like, are those roses? And she's like, yeah, they were like some of the most beautiful flowers you had. I just thought you'd appreciate having them near you. And she's like, no, roses are for love and romance. I don't need that. I need chrysanthemums for protection and strength, which I was like, okay, Dorco.
Yeah.
All right, let's go get your chrysanthemums. Calm down, botanist. I know you have a condition.
Yeah, I'm going to slam you in a locker. I know you're my daughter and you just got blinded or whatever, but I'm going to give you a swirly.
Yeah, I'm about to fill a locker with chrysanthemums and put you in it with them to really protect your ass.
And like, just kind of apropos of nothing, because again, this has got to be a few days later, at least. Delia, who already saw Hank cheating on her through touching his hand like 2 days ago in the hospital, has not kicked Hank to the curb yet for some reason. Touches him again and has the same thing happen and is like, all right, who is this lady I keep seeing? And I'm like, why is it? Is this like the third time it's happened? And now she's like, all right, I'm sick of seeing this redheaded lady who loves Thomas Kincaid. Tell me about her. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Holy shit. Delia's mind reading is like whiffing the important bits so goddamn bad.
Yeah, right.
As we're about to find out, like extremely so. Like this guy leads a double life other than just cheating on her. And her mind reading just misses all of that.
Yeah.
The gift of
it's
the
so
sight.
Good that they, Yeah, they immediately like were like, we're giving this character the sight. So if she touches someone, she knows any of their secrets. It's very powerful as a narrative device. And then like the literal first application, it's like, okay, swing and a miss Mike Piazza. There's a lot of cards in that deck. And she just didn't draw any that said double life.
Or, you know, Thomas Kincaid assassin. None of that. Just kept fucking a lady with red hair. All right.
We know he's a serial killer at the very least. Yeah. Okay, word. Yeah. Hey, anyone listening, in case you think I mean just the serial killer thing, no, there's more.
Yeah, there's more. The John Wick thing is not the end of that tangent, strangely enough, as if that wasn't insane enough. So finally she's done. She's like, get out. And he's like, you're high on all the drugs. And she says, a very confusing comeback, which is, I'm high all right, but it's not the drugs. And I'm like, what does that mean, Delia? Like, did you do a whippet before this? Like, what are you talking about?
Fiona's like, get out while you still can, Jughead, which is a very odd kind of response. But
she just wanted to say, Jessica Lange just wanted to say Jughead for sure.
I'm sure.
And then they throw Hank out. That's the final straw. And they throw Hank out, which he'll be very distraught about in our next episode. And Fiona's like, you've got the sight, and it's a good power, but it's such a tough power to have. I'm like, yeah, it is. It only gives you like 1%. It's like in those super massive games where you can find the totems that will tell you potential ways you could die, but all you see is just like the death scene. So like you have no idea what it correlates to or like what you need to do to avoid it. It's about that helpful. It's about as helpful as the Until Dawn death totems, TBH. But Fiona's like, yeah, you got it. And then Fiona touches Delia. I don't know why Fiona lets Delia touch her, knowing that she has this ability now. Because then Delia immediately sees that Aunt Myrtle got burned at the stake. She calls her Auntie Myrtle, and she sees that Myrtle died. And she's like, holy shit, Myrtle's dead? And Fiona's like, yeah, it's been a long day. I didn't think to tell you about it. We'll talk about it later. And she's like, no, Myrtle. And then she's like, yeah, I did it because she's the one who burned you with acid. And Delia's like, no, it couldn't have been her. And that's the end of that conversation.
Why couldn't it be her? That's a great question, Mega Man. We'll never have the answer. Yeah. We don't know. She just vibes. This is another case of a character intuiting something for the story and being 100% positive because it's just convenient for the narrative. Also, hey, we the viewer know that Fiona absolutely like lied to the council when she did like the whole thing of her burning her hand with Queenie was like a setup.
Yeah.
Delia just missed that part too. Her second sight fucking blows. Right. It's like sight that intentionally tricks your stupid ass.
And going back to like how confusing the powers are and how they interact, we also know that Fiona has like the Jedi mind trick to be able to just be like, no, that didn't happen. She has like gaslight girl boss, but like real, and can just convince people that like they didn't actually see her dig up a body or they didn't actually see it. So I'm like, why did we even need to frame Myrtle, honestly? Why didn't she just use that power, the power of persuasion or whatever that she's been shown to use in multiple episodes now? Why doesn't she just use that on Fiona? We are on Delia. We know she's willing to do it because she threatens to do it to Delia in one of the times she's doing it to the cops. So, yeah, it's, I don't know, it's a lot. But that's about halfway through this episode of the television show, not our episode, because we're already going a long time. And if you think you know what's going to happen next, you don't. Holy shit. I guarantee you do not.
Yep.
Yeah. They take a lot of turns, and they introduce a new angle to one of the characters that is just so insane. I maybe said a little joke name in passing that you might have noticed and been like, well, who could Ty be talking about with that name? You'll find out. It's unbelievable. You won't believe who they made that guy.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Till next time, look forward to seeing what they're going to do with a new character, and Kyle shows up for a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, just like, a little bit.
You missed them.
They keep bringing Kyle back for like a minute or two, and then they're just like, yeah, he still sucks. Nothing changed. Still bad. Still bad. So look forward to that, folks. I'll we'll see you next time.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Take it easy.
Hey.